Thanks for listening to season 4 of the Utah Real Estate Podcast.
The most downloaded series in the whole state and possibly the world.
Hello, I'm Steph Scholl here with the one and only Silver Dollar Man.
Also known as Scott Stevenson. This year, we are consulting with community leaders about the future of the Beehive State.
And how you can best secure a house for your home.
Join the thousands.
And my mom.
That subscribe every Thursday for the most exciting hour of the week.
The University of Utah's Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute shared that Utah added approximately 72,000 people since the 2020 census.
Which, Scott, that is a lot of people. And I don't know if you've seen this. I mean, you're pretty hip now on Instagram and stuff. But trending are hashtags of Utah sucks, tell your friends. And there's merchandise and bumper stickers. I saw one that was like, Moab's terrible, don't go there. You know, like people are wanting to keep it a secret.
They are wanting to keep it a secret. But Stephanie, you know, I left my East Coast ways to come to this desert. And so now, this is the place.
Well, Scott, it's because of people like you that the population has nearly tripled since 1970 and is projected to double by 2050.
Okay, so with this increase in population, it not only affects the housing market, which we talk about a lot, but it also affects jobs, it affects the infrastructure and every aspect of the economy.
So one opportunity for increased jobs is to bring an inland port to Utah.
Well, I don't know about you, Steph, but look, to educate our listeners and ourselves, we have Greg Buxton, the Utah State Senator from District 4, which has been redistricted this year. He also is the Utah Inland Port Authority Board Vice Chair.
So he's basically a big deal, and his career...
He is a big deal.
Greg is rolling his eyes. But Greg, your career was with development and construction, and so you know your stuff.
Well, I've been around a while, done a few things, built a few buildings and developed some properties. And this is, that's probably why I'm on the Inland Port Board, is because I also used to be the director of the state's Facilities and Construction Program. So the DFCM, which is now constructing the prison. The background I have comes from the construction world and development world and real estate. And
okay, so I have this things. Question. Yeah. When I say the term inland port to anybody, they always look at me with a blank stare like, what is that? So give us a kind of a bird's eye view. What is the inland port?
Most people, when they talk about an inland port or they want to see a thing, it's not a thing. It's a logistics program. There are buildings involved in that program, but the inland port consists of programs to bring, like you hear in the news right now, all this nonsense about these cargo ships that are offshore with billions of containers sitting out there.
San Francisco.
San Francisco, Los Angeles ports. They can't get unloaded because they got to go through the port. And the port authority there has to, you know, when you come from another country, you have to go through customs. Well, the inland port is going to be able to allow ships to unload over there, and those things come immediately rather than going through customs. They come immediately here to go through customs. Then why Utah? Because Utah has a rail system that goes north, east, south, and west. It allows those things to happen quicker because we have a transit system that we have here with the railroad, with trucking, you know, a number of things where we can haul things quicker and spread them out faster than being stuck at the port waiting their turn to go through customs.
Wow.
So that allows things to come here. The inland port is basically an authority. The Inland Port Authority is an authority in Salt Lake that gets part of our tax base, and it also controls what is built in that area to, you know, so that we don't do things wrong. We capture as much as we can. But there'll be an unloading facility there. There'll be truck parking there. You know, when trucks haul containers east and west, or a rail loading facility, which is already there, which people don't even know, you know, think about. I'll give you an example. We're building right now, I sit on the PID board, which is the Public Infrastructure Development Board and District Board, and we've just approved some projects to start now, and the legislature has given us money to get these things started. We'll be doing an unloading facility, a transload facility, and we'll be doing a truck parking lot where we can plug trucks in at night so they don't have to idle all night. Now, think about the amount of, you know, carbon that takes out of the air. But we've had a lot of people just misunderstand what this is really all about. But that's what it is. And it's basically the economy that it will bring to Utah will immensely help our state economically. But we're trying really hard to make this a green port. When I say green port, we're trying to electrify things. We're trying to make things so it doesn't, you know, smog. We're putting in infrastructure in roads to take it away from neighborhoods. These are all things that are coming with the inland port. It's not a specific thing. It's a whole process.
Now, how big is this? I know it's not, but it has acreage, right? The port itself.
Okay, the port itself is probably small pieces of property because most of the property out there is already held by private individuals who own the property. The port authority now takes some of the tax base. I think it's like 1,900 acres, takes part of the tax base to get this thing funded. Eventually, it will fund itself. But also gives them the authority over kind of some of the things that are built, even though it's on private property, so that it doesn't conflict with what we're trying to accomplish.
Now, let me understand this. Private property. Now, what do you mean by that? I mean, because normally you don't use private property for this, do you?
Normally you go out and buy the property.
Right.
But most of the property owned out there by individuals are all excited about this because they can now build a warehouse and know that there's people who will use that warehouse. There are people who will use their developments. There are people, and it's not just for the port. There's residential involved in this. There's parks involved in this. There's all kinds of things that as that quadrant of the valley grows, all of these things will develop. It's not just business and economics of business. It's growth and the people to support all that so they can live out by where they work, rather than have to commute across the valley, which causes more jam up in traffic. There's lots of places who would like to do this, but Utah has, if we had a map I could show you, mm-hmm. You can see we have a north and a south line going out of the state. We have east and a west line going out of the state, which goes right to the harbors already and comes across the lake. And there's other railroads that want to participate in this, you know, that would drop more cargo at, you know, and be able to get it out of here on other lines. Right now, the Union Pacific is the only show in town. The BNSF, Burlington North San Francisco line, I think is what it's called, is vying for some, you know, options to bring their rail in and into the where they can load and take it their direction through their system. Eventually, the port here in Salt Lake will be the hub. And then other parts of the state will have like a spoke that goes out to that, that links into the hub, mm-hmm. And they call that the spoke and wheel part. Right now, we're focusing on the hub. But I can tell you, they just put in a new piece of railroad. It just got approved this last week out in Roosevelt, Bernal area.
Oh, wow.
And so that's all part of, you know, the long-range plan of what we're doing or what we're going to do. It's not something that's going to be accomplished in 4 or 5 years. This is like a 20-year plan to get all this in place. Some of the basic things we're working on right now to get, you know, in place. The legislature set up an infrastructure bank for this to be able to draw funds. And we've just passed a bond or passed the authorizations of bonds that are going to build about $150 million worth of structure here. Hopefully we get going on that this next spring. It's been a slow process. There's been a lot of delays. There's been a lot of politics played by different organizations to stop this.
So why would somebody want to stop this? I mean, what is the...
Because they don't understand.
We've had
Audubon people. We've had people, the residents out there saying it'll cause too much pollution. We've had, you know, it's just one thing after another. It's been one delay after another. You know, help educate these groups so that they will back off so we can move forward. That's kind of happening. And we're ready to start moving forward now, breaking ground, and this system get off and get going, because it's a big deal. It's not just a flash in the pan thing. This is a big deal that will bring more economics here, you know, and bring tax base here that we haven't had in the past, which will help our state be able to be more, you know, sustainable. I have to mention, though, Utah's the number one ranked state in the nation. And has been for like 13 years in a row for being financially stable and being the best financially run state in the union.
So cheers for us.
Yeah.
Cheers
for us, exactly.
So you had talked about, you know, that there would be these docking stations where they could plug in. I'm picturing, like, are you talking about, like, the big rigs that...
Any semi that trucks okay. in or trucks out.
And so that's what it is with making it green, so that there wouldn't be as much pollution.
If you go out into the area right now around the intermodal hub, you'll find streets lined with semis on both sides of the street. And if you happen to be the car going west and the semi is coming east, you back up because there's not room to pass him. And that's happening right now. And those men in those trucks, you know, they sleep in those sure. reefers behind their cabs, idle all night long. So if you can prevent that from happening, just think of the, you know, you've got a half a day, 24-hour day, that you don't have to have the semi running and the emissions from that truck polluting our air. So there'll be a parking lot where we're building in the near future where they'll be able to pull into the parking lot, plug their rig in, still have their power for what they need, you know, in their reefer, or if they have a cargo that needs chilling, uh-huh. they can plug that in and not have to run the truck all night.
You know, it's interesting because as I'm thinking about this and people are like, well, what does this affect me, like the semi parked? I'm like, Amazon, like eBay, all these things that we're using that we want the same day delivery. That's why this is so important.
Okay, I'll give you one example.
Okay.
Okay. I want you, when you drive home, well, you might be a little early today, mm-hmm. but you start watching at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You start watching all of the parking lots around these big gas stations like Flying J or some yeah. of the others that, where the trucks park at night. Watch how fast they fill up. Or you see the rest areas on the freeway, how fast they fill up around 5 to 6. That's because the truckers right can only run so long in a day, and then they have to stop. Their right. electronic logbook tells them you can't do it, or you get a ticket.
Right. Interesting.
And so you see truckers almost 30 minutes prior to their time looking for a place to park.
I've seen them plenty of times. Like,
on the off-ramps.
Hotels.
On the off-ramps like and hotels
yeah.
in neighborhoods. And that's a big problem in the state of Utah and across the nation. That's not just Utah. And that's why something like this parking lot is so important to the truckers who are trucking in and out of the port, because it gives them a place to park where they can shut down and feel safe.
Well, so let me ask you, so just to simplify this as best I can in my own mind. So let's say, I'm just going to take an example here. You have some cargo ships that pull in to San Francisco, and they normally will unload and have to go through that port authority.
Right.
And that's, of course, part of the problem we have right now. Everything's being jammed up there. So what would happen here if we become port authority, so to speak, right, is that they would be able to unload there in San Francisco and then not have to worry about it going through customs or
if
the port
it's set
authority.
Up right, they can unload right on the train and come straight here.
Straight to the train, come straight up here. And then here in Utah, they will be there. They'll have to go through the port authority.
Right.
So it looks like a win.
Commodities better and faster.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are still, like, I don't know about you, but you order anything and we've got a vanity or a nice cabinet that goes in our kitchen unordered. We ordered several months ago. Okay. Which, oh, it'll be here. Well, now they're telling us it might be here in January.
Yeah.
Might be, you know, and that's several months later.
Mm-hmm.
I have all kinds of people who are telling me, boy, if you haven't got your Christmas shopping done, you're in trouble because there's not much to buy.
Yeah.
And what's there is expensive because everything else is jammed out in these ships. They're talking billions of dollars offshore,
offshore.
In these tankers out there.
Now, what kind of job creation will that create here in Utah? Or is it many jobs, or is it more about the economy?
Like I say, it's more of a system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're already talking to people from the coast who want to move businesses here, manufacturing businesses. So when they manufacture their stuff, they can ship it right to the coast. That east-west line, especially, we're looking to be a very particular busy hauling goods that are manufactured in Utah out to the coast and to the ships and bringing the stuff out there in. And see, we have a little of that now, but we're talking to companies that are big companies who will ship worldwide that will use that line. And that's really what we're talking about with these hubs, you know. oil production is going to kick up. It's already kicking up with the announcement with this rail line out in the basin. You have to understand, the oil in the basin is different than anywhere else. There's a lot of wax in it. So it has to be heated to be piped. So they truck a lot of it. But the other places in other parts of the world need that. And so we sell oil to other refineries to mix with oil too. And so that's going to open up the fields again. And, you know, out to the basin, when I say basin, Uinta Basin, it's bust or boom all the time. This little bit of railroad that is going to be put in, there's like 8 miles, will open things up so that that will take the edge off of that in the future, because they'll be able to transport that oil out. And a lot of it, you know, when you oil prices go up, oh, everything's great. When oil prices drop, everything's dead in the basin. So it's going to help, not just here in Salt Lake, but statewide. And it's really a statewide program that will grow eventually throughout the state.
So where are we at with the port?
Right now, the port is probably at the very beginning of really starting to happen. You know, the physical part of this. But the things that have been going on, we've been doing memorandums of understanding with both the ports on the coast. Jack Hedge is CEO of the Inland Port Authority. He was hired by the board to come to Utah. And the reason he was hired is the experience he has all up and down the coast. He is by far none the best we could find. We had 11 applicants. We refined it down to three. We had people who had already built ports, inland ports, but Jack shined above all of them. And because of his connections, we're waiting for the facilities now so that we can get this actually going, because it's a big deal. They're excited on the coast about it. People around here don't understand it that well. They're excited on the coast that it's going to, you know, free up some of their workload. And because they haven't get the people, they can't work 24 hours, they can't get the people.
Sure.
We're having that same trouble here in Utah with everybody in jobs right now.
Yeah, it seems like everywhere you go, you got it.
Yeah. You know, I think that this is interesting, because at first, you know, we were talking about that we didn't really understand it. Even though I did research and stuff, it was still hard for me to grasp, because, like you said, it's a system. It's not necessarily one place.
Right.
And I think that's hard to grasp sometimes of, oh, this is what it is. But hearing you talk about these companies wanting to come and manufacture here, I don't know if this is correct, but I saw it somewhere where it talked about we're heavy in tech, but we aren't as heavy in these other areas to help us. Is that a correct thing?
To a point.
Yeah.
There's different parts of the state that are stronger in certain areas. Northern Utah up here is probably more into manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
There's some big manufacturers here. So there's a lot of effort. Northrop Grumman just come in, you know, and that's a $50 billion contract over the next 30 years. And they're going to be bringing a whole slug of people to work just inside the gate here at Hillfield.
Oh.
So now we're opening up 5,600. Next year, I think they'll start widening 5,600 and do an interchange that goes right into the Northrop Grumman area. They're going to bring about 5,000 people to start. We're told it'll be more than that in, you know, as it gets deeper into the contract. They're hiring everybody that's an engineer and logistics. I mean, it's not just that. They built four humongous buildings. The fourth one has started. I think the first one is complete and occupied. The second one is within, you know, close of opening if it hasn't opened yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two are in construction. The fourth one has already started construction. So they're moving forward. I mean, they have to with the amount of work that they've got to accomplish with this new system. It's the security system for the United States.
Whoa, and that's happening right at Hill.
Right up Hill, our little Hillfield.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Hillfield is, you know, people know about Hillfield. There's 26,000 people that work there right now, civilians.
Really?
Yeah.
I never would have guessed.
I mean, that. I know it from the
museum. You would have here in the morning or at night.
Maybe so. I'm down south.
Yeah. So it sounds like there are different manufacturing jobs in the state, but this would just help to provide.
This will bring worldwide manufacturers here. They can distribute faster.
Is there a model city that has already done this in the United States?
There are cities who have inland ports or, you know, some inland port facilities, but they're like a cinder block building and a rail line into them. They're not a big, you know, they're not they're not what we're talking about doing. They're smaller, way smaller. We're talking big, you know, when you can cover the United States. Truckers can pick up in California and they can only drive so far before they run out of time. I think it's 8 hours or 11 hours. I can't remember which it was. Utah is right there. So they can get here in a day from the port or a day and a quarter from the port and pick up or take back.
Mm-hmm.
It can come across on rail line. You don't have the same restrictions.
Right.
So it's quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But there will be, you know, we're looking at having to do things to make this work out there. Overpasses over, what is it, 201 that goes out. Different things like that that are going to have to be put in place. There's more rail that has to be put in. There are some stumbling blocks in the way that we're trying to work through at the state level. You know, properties that, well, an old dump site that has to be cleaned up, you know, to make it more pristine for the people to build on. You can't build on trash. So there's things like that that are still, we got to build a curtain wall. We're building a curtain wall kind of thing to stop the underground aquifer under the dump from leaking in over into the lake. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's that technology is being worked through and the expense of that's being identified. So there's things like that the public doesn't know about. The people in the area don't know about. But these are all things we're doing to protect the environment out there. We're shading the lights so they don't bother the birds. There's lots of things, but step by step, it's going to take a long time to get all this stuff done.
Yeah, is that the biggest objection to the port? Or is there an objection to the port other than the environmental potential?
Are you kidding me? I've had three years of total beatings. Actually, more than that. In meetings and...
Are any of them valid? I mean, I know there's two sides to every story.
We've had professional agitators. We've had local people who have been stirred up with false information,
mm-hmm.
That have come and just raised... Okay. It's been in the news throughout for, mm-hmm. The last 3 years, all the different things that these meetings have turned into. I've sat through all of them. And sometimes it doesn't matter what you say. If it's something, it's just how you say it, and they just go after you. So you're best to just kind of sit sternly with a calm face and let it roll off, because if you would really let it get to you, you'd be irate.
This just puts into perspective of, sometimes when I go through construction, I'm like, that's so annoying. Like, why are they doing construction?
Yeah.
But really, where you're sitting as a Utah senator, you're seeing this whole big vision for what Utah can be. And maybe it's a little traffic delay for some people, but that really helps to just build everything that we're going to have 20 to 30 years. And I think that the Inland Port, especially with all our growth that we're projected to have, will be something that we will need so that everyone can have jobs.
That's exactly right. They moved the state prison out to the west.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to put it out there, they put infrastructure in. It would have probably never been put out there before. So now the properties that are out there, a lot of those properties can be developed where they couldn't before because there wasn't infrastructure.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Which can, you can put housing out there, residential housing, which we certainly need.
Yeah.
In the state of Utah, and
power that's out there that power. Used to be.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, exactly. As a city grows, there are growing pains. And yes, the Inland Port could be looked on as a growing pain. The prison going out where it is, that's a growing pain, but it had to be done.
Well, I happen to live in Bluffdale, and, the prison's leaving from, it says Draper, but it's...
I lived in Salt Lake in 1955, and the prison was pretty new at the point of the mountain, because I remember as a young boy, there was three men escaped from the prison. But look at it now. The city's growing right past it, and as soon as, I think this coming year, we're going to start tearing those buildings down. I think the prison moves in June,
and
we'll start tearing those facilities down. I have to tell you, Buxton Masonry did a lot of the masonry at the prison, and we know how much steel is in those walls. That's going to be a real chore to tear that down.
Oh, man.
So.
Well, progress is progress.
It is.
And sometimes, we've been sitting down. I mean, I'm from the East Coast, so, back in Maryland, these buildings have been around since, 1600s. I think one of the things that I've most discovered about being out in Utah is how young it is. I don't really think people understand that have even lived here is that this is a real young state with a lot of potential down the road. And it sits in a tremendous location, as you say, in linking the country, particularly the West Coast.
Yeah. The state is growing leaps and bounds. Like you said in earlier in the podcast, mm-hmm. Our population is going to double. It's going to grow a lot. Now, visualize in your mind Salt Lake City, and I double that in the next 30 years.
And that's hard to imagine.
I think the single hardest thing that we have to do in the state of Utah is fund transportation mm-hmm. to get people to and from work. And so what we're looking at in this inland port area is you can put people out there that can work at the inland port. You don't recongest the valley more because you've put them closer to their jobs. And that's kind of what development is starting to do more and more, is develop and spread things out a little instead of having everybody in town. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
You got to go to town to work. We're starting to sprinkle people around the valley so that they can go to work and they're closer to home. And so, I whine and complain when I drive 15 to Salt Lake, but when I go out to Draper or Harriman or some of those other places at night, it makes I-15 look like a cakewalk mm-hmm. almost. It's not a cakewalk. Trust me, I come home every night with a stiff neck and white knuckles. It's fun to be part of this.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a broader vision, and the people of the state of Utah are going to benefit from this in more ways than one. They're going to benefit financially. They're going to benefit with the way of life. All of these things are going to make life here in the valley better. There are those naysayers who say, oh, this is going to be just a cesspool. We'll be breathing. We live in a state where the big valleys fill up in the wintertime because of inversion. It's not always just smoke. If they was to, the air is cleaner now than it's ever been. And as technologies continue to develop, it will be cleaner and cleaner. And, there's people working on that. There's caucuses that meet every month on that kind of thing and issue, trying to work out bills to help be more clean and more green and more this and more that, But there are things that we haven't even seen yet that will help with that, too. Technologies that are being developed. Everybody thought Grant Bangeter was nuts when he peeled the pumps out there, And yeah, the pumps are high and dry, but I tell you what, there's years those pumps work mighty fast and hard to keep flooding down. So.
Well, I want to just pick your brain a little bit because you do have all this experience. And being a part of the Senate, you hear all these things that are going on. We're curious. We're wanting to know what are some issues that people
are coming down the
road.
Well, transportation is probably the single largest one. Water development is another one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those two, especially clean air, is going to be a factor. You're already starting to see in other parts of the nation where water is seriously overutilized. Let me put it that way. Las Vegas has all kinds of laws in place right now. You can only have like 700 square feet of grass in your front yard, and you have to do zero scape and gravels and things like that because you're only given so much water, and so much water is expensive.
Yeah.
Because of their connection into the Colorado River and the drainage from Colorado, they really don't get a big share out of the Colorado River. It's only like 300,000 acre feet. When Utah gets, I think it's 7.5 million acre feet. But there's not that much water coming down the Colorado River anymore because there's no, there's a drought going on here and there's not the water pouring into it. So I think when they started, the original founders on the Colorado River started there was 15 million acre feet coming down the river. Anyway, it was divided up and everybody got a percentage. Years have gone by where we had plenty of water and Las Vegas started using the water that was excess water, but that excess water is all gone now. And so they're getting cut way back on what they can have. We just don't let it down the river. So it's a real tight time. That's one of the, real
issues
with the growth and being able to have, the pipeline coming out of Lake Powell into St. George area. That's a big deal. But with the water drop like it is, I think we can only drop like 20 more feet and you won't be able to generate power out of Lake Powell. So, see, water affects more than just us being comfortable and having a cold drink and a green lawn. It affects a lot of things. Lake Mead, this is the same story in Lake Mead. Lake Mead's not that far from not being able to generate power out of the dam. So water affects a lot of things, not more than people think.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know all this until I went to water school in September here in Utah. I had a water school.
They have water school?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm an average Joe. Most of the time I'm not educated on the major issues.
Yeah.
And most of the time that's because I don't take the time to become educated. And that's part of the reason why we're doing this podcast, to give people an opportunity. Because I don't know. I don't want to go down to the school. I don't want to go down anywhere and listen. I'm just going home and taking my shoes off and kicking back and enjoying the show. One of the reasons why we want to do this podcast was so that it would give an opportunity for people to listen to some of these issues that are going to have major impact on their lives and can do it at their leisure. It could be midnight if they want, and they're sitting in their bed and they can listen to Scott and Steph as we talk to Senator Buxton about the inland port. And so we're hoping that by talking with you and others that have taken the time and are public servants, that we can educate people so that they have a better idea of these
I can tell you issues. This. The people who do not engage, who do not vote, are the loudest people when it comes to complaining. And when they call me, one of the questions I ask them a lot is, did you vote? And I'll say, no, I don't get involved in this. And I said, then you have no say.
Yeah.
And really, people need to understand that. You know, in a normal voting year, when it's not a presidential election, you get, what, 12, 13% people come out and vote? And you divide it's that low. And you get divide that between parties.
Right.
You get elected by a, you know, not even a smidgen of, you know, of the people you represent. But then when you're voted, they think that they own you. I voted for you.
Yeah.
And I says, no, you elected me to go and to study issues, to understand them and vote accordingly. Not be a puppet. And so I guess I'm spouting things here that if they hear, they say, well, we're kicking him out.
Well, no. So what you're saying to me, get off your lazy duff and get out there and study these issues is what you're saying. And I'm okay with that because I think you're absolutely right. It's hard to complain when you don't want to be part of the solution, which is to study the issues and vote intelligently.
One of the things I see right now is people have changed. And if, you know, we may have a difference of opinion, but the change is that if you differ from me, I hate you.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. And you're wrong. You can't agree to be, you know, have different opinions. You're my way or you're the highway. But, you know, and it's getting worse that way. And people's comments when they call or text are getting pretty ruthless in some ways, you know, and vulgar. And And to be in politics, you have to have skin like that. And it's like, I call it rhino hide. Because you have to be thick skin. You can't be a thin skin person and take the abuse that we take sometimes. And you would quit if you weren't able to handle that.
And I have more of a personal question, but what was it that made you want to go into politics? Like you said, like having that thick skin, and there's people that are now, it's like, they don't agree, they hate you. Like, what keeps you wanting to be a part?
I didn't.
You didn't?
I didn't want to be a part of it. the representative District 12, which is the House district, this was District 12 at the time. It's changed with the redistricting now. But he came to me and he says, Greg, you just retired or just left your church position. I was a stake president at the time. And he says, we'd like you to take my place. I says, oh, Jerry, I says, I'm too stupid to do that. He says, no, you're not. You're successful. And I said, well, thank you. And he asked me to do it. And I told him no. And he said, well, don't say no. Then I got a call from the Weber County Republican chair, Craig Dearden. And I got a call from Marty Stevens, who was the Speaker of the House at the time. Then I got a call from Nolan Karras, who was the Speaker of the House, who lives just a block from here. And said, you need to do this. And there was reasons why. So my wife and I prayed about it and fasted for it and got our answer. And that was in 2003. I was in the House for 5 years, and when Huntsman appointed me to be the director of the state's facilities, then I left there and went to Ogden City, and 2 years of being the kind of legislative liaison with the city, I said, I get a lot more done inside. So they said, if you're willing to do that, we'll work with you. So we worked out a deal between the city and myself, and then I went back as a senator. I've been in the Senate now for 5 years.
How many senators are in the state of Utah?
29. You'd think one per county. It's one for every, 112,800 and something
people. It's on population.
And the redistricting, redistrict to the person. So there's that many people in the each district as of that day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because it changes day by day as people move and houses are built.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, areas that grow. But it's based on people. So some of these senators, they have 4 or 5 counties that they have to travel to talk to their people.
I see.
You know, I have a pretty small geographical district, but it's solid people.
Because it's Davis and Weber County?
I have part of Davis County, and I have the western half of Weber County, from I-15, everything west. The bulk of the population in District 4 is probably Roy, Sunset, Clinton, Clearfield, a little bit of Clearfield, down into Hooper, Plain City. There's like 11 cities, I think, in my district.
Awesome.
So if you over looking back over the last 17 years in politics, would you do it again?
Yeah. It changed the course of my life. Yeah. It really did. I became involved in things. Like when I went to be the director of the DFCM, I was a general contractor, land developer. So I knew the processes. I knew the procedures. So when I went there, it was just bigger. Everything we built was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You still did footings. You still did foundations. You still did plumbing, electrical, heating, air conditioning, all of the things, you know. I think the largest building built was probably the U-Star building up on the campus of the University of Utah. It was a $170 million building. But but that was as technical a building as I think anybody ever builds, you know, with all the things that they were doing. And floors had to be less than a 16th of an inch out of level. I mean, perfectly to make the equipment work properly. Ventilation systems, you know, to keep all the bad stuff in and not let it out of the room that they were working with. It changed the course of my life, literally. From being a general contractor to more of a manager to more of, you know, the high-tech end, the political part, having been through all of those agencies, I understand it differently now than I did before. Having worked in both, you know, the legislative branch and the executive branch and private industry and private government, you know, the local governments, gives you a better rounded opinion as you look at things. You know, when I ran for office as a senator, people says, well, what's your issue? I said, I don't have an issue. Somebody's got to go down and look at things from just a normal person's view.
Yeah.
And that's who and what I am, really. I'm the rules chair.
So you mean you're a normal person?
I'm a normal person. You know, you have this idea, you have all this idea build up that these are these big, giant, smart guys are just local people that are willing to give their time. You have a lot of attorneys, you have a lot of school teachers, but then you have bus drivers, you have housewives, you have, I mean, there's a variety. Small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
We have a cupcake, you know, a man who owns a cupcake store.
Yeah.
You have people who are high tech. You have, you know, it's the people of Utah in general. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be somebody that's going with, I've got this hidden agenda, and I've got this agenda, and I'm going to pound this agenda through. That's not what this is about. This is to represent the people and do what's best for the people of the state of Utah. And that's the way I think, and I vote against things that I don't think are good for it.
Yeah.
And I vote for things that I think that are going to help people.
So what have been, like, some of your proudest things that you've seen come about during this time?
Well, I carried a bill years ago. Nobody probably even knows what it is or whatever. It never got any highlights, but I'm probably the most proud of that bill. It was only $1 million, but it covered the whole state of Utah with triangulation towers to allow GPS to pick up in the state of Utah where you can track a load that comes across our state all the way, you know, right where he stops, when he, what time he stopped, where he goes, where he went. You know, so if we get a load of chemicals or something or nuclear stuff coming through, that's tracked and we can see that and know exactly where. People get caught in an avalanche, the GPS system works, and they can hit it within 3 centimeters.
Yeah.
So, and it's a simple bill, and it, you know, it was tough to get that money because I got it in $500,000 grips over a period of 2 years. But I'm probably the most proud of that because it's the most, it affected the lives of the people in Utah, made it safer and made it available to do many other things. There are things like that. I was instrumental in bringing the veterans nursing homes to the state of Utah, and we funded one. Was used as a leverage in the Senate to get another bill, and they didn't fund it during the session. So we took it to a special session. When I got through with it in the special session, I had every single legislator in the whole body, both Senate and House, sign it as sponsors. And we built the first veterans nursing home here in Ogden. We had one for the whole state. So if in the state, they wouldn't allow people to stay in a private nursing home, you know, a veteran. They had to be in a veterans nursing home. We had one in Salt Lake, and it was full, and there was a waiting list forever.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got the one in built up here. But when the government funded, the federal government funded 3/4 of it, and the state funded 1/4, well, the federal government didn't have the money that year. So the state was had the money, so we built it. Well, I went from the legislature to the DFCM at that time, the Department of Facilities and Construction Management, as the director of the state's facilities. And so I told the team, I says, okay, we're going to build this to federal standards. They says, why? And I says, because they're supposed to reimburse us. They find one thing that doesn't meet federal standards, that's their
loophole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they tried that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, boys, we got you. Anyway, we got $14 million from the federal government. And then 2008 hit. And you know what happened then.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no money. But here's Utah with the reimbursed money. We took it aside, didn't use it in the budget. We set it aside for veterans. And says, well, looky here. We have enough to do two. Because the other one was paid for. So we had that matching funds, which was the funds that they'd given us for the first one that we did ourselves. And so we got another one in Ivins and another one in American Fork, Spanish Fork.
Yeah, Spanish Fork.
And so I'm very proud of that. And then there's, you know, there's lots of little things. You know, we brought money down I-15. We brought money to the airport. I brought $10 million to the airport last year to help them develop the west side of the Ogden airport for expansion from the base. That's coming on to Ogden. You know, that's still kind of up in the air a little bit, kind of questioning. We don't talk too much about it, but it's something that's going to happen. And the development of our airport into more of a regional type airport. Carried a bill last year called Shot Dot, which was a little tiny chip that they use in the handle of a gun that dates the time the gun was fired and the number of shots.
Whoa, really?
And so it makes it so when they get into investigations, there's no question of how many shots were fired.
Yeah.
There's no question of what time the gun was fired, you know, and things like that. So it's really a protection for our police.
Sure.
It also tells me how many times the gun is shot so that, if, you know, the gunsmith needs to know if the gun needs to be replaced or work done on it. So that's a pilot program. I think that we're going to have to extend the deadline on that this year because of all the logistics problems getting chips.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. But, seems like we got that problem in a lot.
You know, there's a lot of little things like that.
Yeah.
Well, Senator, it's been really enlightening,
and
right?
And, you know, I love like hearing about the Inland Port, but I think just hearing you talk about these things that you've done over 2 decades in politics, because to be honest, like, it's something that I haven't really thought much about it until we did the episode about the gondola. He was in the Sandy City a councilman for 15 years, but hearing him talk at a local level made me be like, oh, it is important for me to know what's going on around me and to be informed on these issues. So if people want to know more about the Inland Port, where can they go to find out actual facts?
There's announcements that, you know, that hit the media every so often. They just announced that the PID board had passed a bond or was going to pass a bond for these new projects.
Well, we want to thank you, Senator, for allowing us, first of all, taking the time to talk about this, and second of all, to allow us, we came to your home, and we appreciate your hospitality and letting us come here. Right, Steph?
Right.
It's been very, very informative, and it's been a pleasure to meet you.
Just a plug for all you homeowners out there. Remember, you get to choose your title company.
And here at Title One, there's a reason why there's a one in our title. Learn all about our colossal closings
by going to askusutah.com.
We celebrate with you in securing a house for your home.